Hey, security peeps. We are live with another edition of Breaking Into Cybersecurity. I'm Renee Small, cybersecurity super recruiter, helping awesome leaders hire great talent and talent management expert. And I am here with Roland, and he's jamming. This man is so much
Put the
fun
music back on,
already.
Renee. I was just getting ready to rock and roll here.
I see that. I see that. I said he came game ready. He has on the party shirt. He's dancing. He's ready. What's actually in that coffee cup that you have there? Is that actually,
Is this cable? Oh, I can say it. No, I'm just kidding. Just straight up coffee.
This is going to be a fun live, as you can already tell. So, Roland, we are going to kick it off by talking about your career. I know you have a background in the military. We're going to start off with that, and then we will get into all the fun things that you've done. When Roland and I got an opportunity to chat, we talked about how he hired over 400 security professionals in less than a year or a year and a half.
No, 2 years. 2 years. It was a
Less than
long
2 years.
2 years.
So we'll talk about that. Talk about all the different skills that he looks for when he's looking for talent. So let's just jump right in and get started. So Roland, tell me about how you got to where you are today.
Oh, so back when computers were actually stone. No, just kidding. I did start in the military, as you mentioned. I started on the other side of security, if you will. When I left the Air Force and the Department of Defense out of their security police and anti-terrorism programs, I went into federal law enforcement. And what was really interesting is that a lot of the cases I was coming up against all had something to do with technology back in the late 90s. And so I went back to school. I didn't have the skill set necessarily. No, I didn't have the skill set, period, to be able to really be investigating these type of crimes. And the CART teams with the FBI were new and small at the time. So, I just started sucking up the knowledge and learned that it was a really unique capability to understand how to protect things from a very physical and global sense, 9 countries in 3 years with the government, to protecting computer systems, infrastructures, and enterprises. And off I went, built a couple of my own companies, end up working for EMC, now Dell, and as their first chief security officer. Then went to work for an amazing company, ADP, the global HCM and payroll company, for a decade. Learned some just amazing things there and got to build an unbelievable organization. Then was asked to come and build the global security program for TikTok and ByteDance. And really interesting times. Obviously, focus was building a national security program here in the United States, but the capability to build all of the security programs outside of China to enable them to be a global player and a global trusted brand. So, yeah, it's been an interesting, let's just say, more than a couple of years doing this work.
That's fantastic. So you came out of the military directly into a chief security officer role?
I came into a little known company anymore called EDS, now HP, but EDS at the time was a global consulting and outsourcing organization. And I helped them build security teams for critical infrastructure organizations in healthcare and Fiserv. One of the things I love doing is building highly focused, highly operational groups. Of men and women that are really mission focused, that love doing this work. And that is essentially what I did for them. It was a fun time of, no one really doing this type of work to all of a sudden, we're building security teams for some of the biggest companies in the world. It was really fun.
That's fantastic. So let's actually just jump right from there to you building security teams for all of these amazing companies across the world. So when you're typically looking, and I guess over the years, it, well, not I guess, it has changed for what you're looking for when it comes to building security teams. What would you say would be some of the skill sets that you looked for then? And then has that transitioned, and you know, how has that changed over the years to what you look for in talent now?
Well, it's changed a lot. Let's take a step back. I think when I go in as a senior security executive in a company, one of the first things I do is look at what's the mission of the organization? What do we have to deliver from a service delivery, service catalog point of view? And do we have the right job roles, right? You want to hire not just the right people. I mean, you have to hire the right people. That's kind of a given. But you also have to give them an opportunity to be in the right position, to be able to grow, to be able to have job pathing, to do all the right things, to be a good employer. I have to look at those job families. So one of the first things I do is always say, do we have the right jobs? And if not, change it. And those are going to change over time. If you think about, you know, kind of like 2015 era when cloud computing was going from, I'm going to spin up, you know, VPCs and containers in my environment, migrate those over to AWS to a full digital ecosystem transformation to cloud, right? That very, very different skill sets. You have to find cloud engineers that want to be security engineers or security engineers that you train to be cloud people. And we have these in different disciplines as security risk and privacy enforcement has become a much broader topic with much deeper technical requirements in so many disciplines. I mean, think about it. I think typical ISO/ESECA kind of view is like 14 different disciplines with 22 sub disciplines within those. You can be in security risk and privacy for your entire career and switch jobs every year to do something new. And so my focus is, and when I go into the organization, find what jobs need to be there and then put the right staffing program in place to go achieve that.
Great. Do you think a lot of your peers operate like that?
I think so. I think especially on some of the larger programs, the truth is, don't tell anybody this, we share information, right? Like, so how do we get the best people? How do we think about keeping people? How do we get employee engagement at a higher level, right? It's hard to do that when your entire organization is the 911 for the company and like all the crap, bad stuff that happens, we handle. But it's also really fun, right? Like you get the men and women in the SOC or the CERC that are tip of the spear. You have the people in privacy enforcement and privacy engineering defense that are ensuring the privacy of consumer information and adhering to the global laws and the jurisdictions we operate in. You have, you know, risk management people that are helping the business make smart, reasonable decisions to protect the resiliency of the business itself. And, you know, and on and on. I mean, I can go through each one of these areas that are so important, and it's fulfilling work. I really think it is. So I think one of the things that security leaders that I know that are really great at is how do I engage my organization and how do I help them on their path to what they want to do in this career? So, you know, we can keep them forever.
Well, that leads to retention and, you know, being on someone like your team seems like it would be a lot of fun.
You have no idea.
Seems like it would be a lot of fun. I don't know. Have you had challenges? I've been in organizations where they've had challenges, a lot of retention challenges, and I've heard about it over the years where people, you know, come and go. Have you had that happening in the teams that you've been in?
Or? Sure. Especially when you're a multinational, right? And you have like in two jobs ago, I had security operations in 13 different countries around the globe on like most of the continents. It's like, so you have regional and jurisdictional issues based just on the global, you know, workforce issues that are ongoing. Sometimes you have organizational issues where you're going through tough financial times. I think there's ways to combat against that a little bit. Like, so for instance, I like when I'm building an organization, I do an 80-20, 80% contractors, 20% FTE. When we get to operational capability, I like it to be 80% FTE and 20% contractors. So if I have to reduce costs, I can start with my contractors first and protect the long-term viability of the jobs of the people that are my full-time employees. I think the complexity around engagement for security practitioners is very, very different than all other technologies. First, most people I know in this job field are here because they want to help. They want to do good work. They want to stop bad guys. They want to win for, you know, the global norm that relies on the digital ecosystem that is our society, that is our businesses, that is our communities, right? So you got to give a mission, right? Like, so I think a lot of people do leave for money eventually. But I think when they feel like they have a really good mission, they have a really good job path, they can be an individual contributor for 20 years, do well, be happy at it, and be satisfied. Or, you know, they can be halfway into their career and say, you know, I want to change. I like this leadership thing, or I like this management thing. Will you train me? And there are paths to do that. As a leader, when I can enable those pathways for people and offer different careers, like maybe you get bored doing, I don't know, DevSecOp work, or maybe you get bored doing AppSec work. Well, you're like, I want to try global vulnerability on the enterprise side first. Or, you know, hey, can you train me to be a cloud engineer? Sure. It's cheaper for me to train you to be a cloud engineer than me go out and find another one, right? And by the way, you're a welcome member of my team, and you know, I want to see your success in the future. You know, Renee, one of the things I do is, a great chief security officer from Anish from JPMC a while ago taught me this. You know, if you measure yourself on the future success of your employees, you have a better chance at really understanding what it takes to be, you know, a leader that leads people. And so I've always used the same thing that he used, which is how many chief security officers have come from any of the organizations that I have led? And I am proud to say that as of like 2 months ago, it's up to 29. So in a career spanning 30 years or almost 30 years, that's like one a year of people that have been in one of my organizations that are now in chief security officer or chief security officer like positions around the globe. And it is fun to watch. And so what I tell other leaders out there is, you know, when you focus on the success of your people, your success is almost guaranteed. But what's even more important is that you create the ability for other new leaders to be successful through watching, you know, how they care for their people.
I've heard that before. 29 chief security officers. That's amazing. And I have heard from others, from another security leader, pretty much the same thing. Like, how many other leaders have you built? How many folks have gone off to do amazing things? So that, wow, 29. I don't think I've heard of that before.
Yeah.
Are you that guy? You're the person that did 20, have 29.
At 30, I get a gold watch is what I'm hearing.
We have some comments coming through, but they're not coming through on StreamYard way they usually do. So I'll read it. Dr. Romy, who is one of our listeners that usually comes on, he says, not all companies are able to keep up with the evolution of cyberspace. Is it possible that impacts that employees working in fire drill situations? If so, how can employees better prepare themselves to avoid being consumed by the lack of organizational innovation?
Yeah, so let's break that apart, because he's talking about like three really different issues right there. So let's just talk about preparing for, what's a polite way to say this? Poo storms, right? Negative impact events are going to happen. They just are. And sometimes it'll be with new technology. Sometimes it'll be with old technology. Sometimes it'll be with new bad guys that we haven't seen their capabilities before. I mean, there's a lot of things that will impact our organization. So number one, train. Like organizations should focus on being able to do not just like broad tabletop exercise. Tabletop exercise are really important, but doing real capability training around how to do incident management, like how to set up an incident management team, how to go into a 24/7 mode, how to integrate with ecosystem partners that are part of your third, fourth, fifth party environment that are actually sometimes causing these issues or that are part of these issues. How do you do joint training exercises with those? How do you work with local law enforcement in training opportunities with the ECTF or Interpol or Europol or wherever you operate? So I think training on the building blocks of responding to issues is important. Take a local police department in your area, right? They train on how to respond to major incidents. Now, they don't know if it's going to be a fire, an active shooter, a bank robbery. They don't know what it's going to be, but they know how to respond and set and deploy people and use the right resources and call on the right resources. So I always tell people, don't think of the technology shifts as the problem. Think about how we respond as the base issue and build that muscle up. Second, how do you plan for these type of events? Well, this gets actually to me not making fun of tabletop exercise, but actually using them. So think of your industry, your adjacencies, your competitors, and look at all the most probable issues you're going to have. Whittle those down to 5, 10, no more than 15, and then create playbooks based on those and do tabletops. Get your team ready to understand who they call, who their backup and support is, what are the protocols necessary for those type of incidents. You may not even have that technology. You may have never seen that attack before, but maybe, you know, you're Meta and, you know, you're seeing what's happening at Google. You should probably prepare for that, right? Or maybe you're in a healthcare organization and you saw a regional healthcare facility get blasted with something in the Northeast and you're in the, you know, North Central. You should probably prepare for that, right? So preparing, having even high level action playbooks for different types of incidents within your industry, even if it hasn't happened to you, is super important. And then this is for the leaders out there. When you're integrating new technology into your environments, right? So the managers, leaders, program leads, a part of your project plan should be, how do you integrate that new tech, that new process, that new service you're building into monitoring, into the IR team, into the threat team, right? They should all have a piece of that to be operationally ready to use, manage, and respond to that. Often, we just deploy something because the team needs it or the business needs it or so-and-so needs it, or the CIO has to put it in and we're part of the team, but we don't bring it back to the totality of our organization. Remember, it takes a village to protect, defend, monitor, respond, recover in an organization. And all those sub-disciplines in your organization have to have skin in the game, understanding what's coming, and it has to be part of the project methodically going through that as part of every project plans. So that is a long answer, but it was like a three-part question. So you got to give me props. I did in under like a half hour. So
you get props for that one. For sure. For sure. So when you, I mean, you talked about a bunch of different things there in that last answer. When we talk about some of the questions that I get often from especially people who are trying to break into the industry now, they ask me, you know, I got a question recently, like I'm 38 years old, you know, I want to break into security. What do you think? Is it a good time? What, you know, what should I do? What should my path be? And I get those very often. If someone comes to you with that kind of question, what are some of the things that you would tell them?
Well, Renee, to start off, if they're going to security, I probably wouldn't use the term break in. Just kidding. So there's so many paths. you know, it's to get into security risk and privacy. There's so many opportunities. Listen, you need to certainly have some skill, and you need to have an understanding and a want to do this work. So let's break it down a couple ways. Let's start with people that are technical, maybe IT. I love stealing IT people. They're so smart. They've done technology for a long time. And they're like, they're seeing the security stuff and saying, that's pretty cool. I'd like to do that. So I think one of the paths that I always say to technical people is do, you know, a baseline certificate program. Like, you're already technical, you're already doing, you know, you understand networks, maybe you understand, you know, app dev, like, depending where you're coming from, take a specific security program aligned to your existing skill set, and then make that your first step. Go into network security, go into cloud security, go into AppSec, right? You're a developer, go get a certificate, just get a little bit more training on the fundamental, you know, ways that we think about security by design or SDLC or NetSec or what have you. And then take a lateral job, right? As you're starting to understand how this works and the value you bring. So that's an easy entry for IT. I think the second major opportunity that people have is when they are a professional, like, maybe they're in program management, or they're in portfolio development, or they're in service management, right? Well, security organizations need those positions too, right? People often say, well, go get your CISSP. Well, it's not that easy, because CISSP or some of those, like, you know, actually have a requirement that you're actually doing this work for 2 or 3 years. But I don't need a CISSP in my service development team to help me build great service, you know, go to operations service capabilities for my business. I just need someone that knows what they're doing. So look for jobs supporting security organizations in that area. Now, maybe you're a security executive, you know, you're in your mid-30s, or not a security executive, you're an IT executive, you're a finance executive. Those are a little bit different. Those, if you're going to lead people in this job, you really got to know the discipline. So I always say, you know, instead of getting an MBA or a second MBA or, you know, whatever you have, think about programs that help develop your security programs, maybe at UPenn or down in Maryland or down, you know, Norwich. I mean, there's like 15 or 20 of these programs out there. You know, Carnegie Mellon has a great one. Harvard has a great one, where they will actually step people through what security leadership is like in some of the critical functions and how to think about business operations protection. Because you can't really, you know, say, well, I'm a great CFO, I can manage large organizations. Maybe you can, but do you want a CFO providing, you know, being the, I don't know, chief of staff at your doctor's office or the hospital you go to? Probably not. You probably want a doctor, right? So those might be longer paths where you actually take and develop yourself through a known program. But I think if you start with an aligned capability in a part of the security risk and privacy organizations that you can use your existing skill sets, got a couple of years on your belt, see what you like, then develop towards your new thing that you're interested through, you know, career development courses. You don't need to go back to school unless it's highly technical to learn some of these fundamental things. I'm a big believer in certificate programs. I'm a big believer in SANS programs and other things that give you the tacit knowledge necessary to accomplish the mission space.
That's really good to hear. We have another question that came through, or a comment, from Justin Klosterman, and he is a Marine Corps veteran.
Hoorah.
He says, I am trying to complete a career transition from law enforcement into cybersecurity, and I am not finding where I fit. I'm trying to complete the Google cybersecurity course now, but after that, I'm not really sure where to get started.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I have been mentoring law enforcement. I'm a former law enforcement guy, military guy, you know, came out and realized that was one of the hardest transitions in my life. And for a whole bunch of reasons.
I've heard so much.
Civilians don't think straight, right? Like, you know, I mean, when you come out of the womb, you know, of the military back into normal life, it's very, very different for a lot of different reasons. But also, you know, direct skill sets may not transfer. Now, if you're in military police and you can do investigations or forensics, there's always a need for forensics operations. There's tangible programs in the cyber intelligence, threat management, and things like in social media around trust and safety that are slam dunks because you know how to look at information, you know how to look at intelligence information, you know how to make a quick decision, you know how to, you know, manage under pressure. Those things can turn yourself into a good job just by being able to do that. So it's kind of like building what I want to do, right? Like what's the top five jobs I want to do and why, and how does my skills transition to that? Sometimes it's good to use a mentor. Sometimes it is, it's better to start with, you know, a military transition program that can get you the required training. But often it's better to talk with someone in the industry that can help explain the difference. So for my, you know, Marine Devil Dog friend, go ahead and hit me up on LinkedIn, see if I can connect you with myself or the right person to help you think through, you know, what job you might be looking at and how you can position yourself for that.
That's him. It's Justin Klosterman. So Justin, I was just going to ask, my next question was going to be, how do they get mentors? What do they need to do?
Yeah.
Get up rolling.
Yeah. Just hit me. I think there's a lot of great men and women in this space that are that have done it. And we're happy to help other veterans or people coming out of public safety, public service to make that transition. I've helped teachers. I've helped people, you know, military officers coming out. It's not an easy transition, but it's extremely doable. And it's just as rewarding because you're going from a life of service to a new type of life of service, defending the digital ecosystem that is our society today. And it can be a really, really cool transition.
Yeah, I've heard, I was having a phone call yesterday and there was a lot of discussion around veterans coming into, you know, transitioning out and how difficult it's been. And to your, as you said, civilians, we don't think straight.
I was being polite.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. Well, so I wanted to pivot into the 400. So when you talked about earlier and, you know, a couple of weeks ago when we first chatted, saying how quickly you were able to hire over 400 people into an organization.
I had help.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that is crazy. So talk to me. Well, before we say that, Justin says, I appreciate the information. His last 6 years have been in internet child sex crime. So I do have some investigation experience, but qualifying for IT jobs has not been easy.
Yeah, we'll almost get him into a trust and safety organization. That sounds right up his alley. And right. I know a few people in those groups that it's a great first step because he's going to be doing some of the stuff he's been doing. And really helping families at you know, high levels within different type of media organizations.
Right. Absolutely.
So yeah, so, yes. I mean, it was a crazy a couple of years. I mean, I've built large organizations before, but typically over a few years, right? You generally get to that level of operation after a few years. But this was a, you know, critical requirement for the success of you know, the business I was supporting. And first it starts with leaders, right? You have to have a like-minded command staff or leadership team that understands the priorities and what they need to be operationally efficient and capable to deliver the mission set. And we can all be aligned around job families. The second is we have to have a really great relationship with our recruitment organization. That takes the longest, right? Because not all recruiters are really like experienced with security. You can find a great recruiter.
Like
yeah. But that's what I'm saying, right? Like you need people that get people like me and get the industry. And And what happens is a lot of times, if you don't focus on that, you tend up doing the cycles just wait, take too long. So we ended up having four dedicated cyber recruiters and two external support, I think, so like six FTE just going through these jobs. And we worked with changing our methodology around how to doing the evaluation criteria review and interviewing in a way that made sense and was able to accelerate and speed up that process probably like by 50%. So we had to adjust kind of the way that we did it and what we were looking for. And we had to really say this was going to be a crawl, walk, run. We weren't going to get everybody at 100% of their job functions. We had to start thinking about, can I get a good qualified candidate at 50% of the job requirement and then build that individual up to, you know, 80 to 100% over time? And so that was the next way we did it. And we did what we all do. We first looked into people that we know and trust and we would want to work with us and reached out to them. But more importantly, we put our faith and trust in those people and said, who do you want to work with? And you'd be surprised at the level of capability and how fast you can actually recruit people when you start asking your own employees, who would you want to work with? And that's exactly what we did. So we had six recruiters banging away. We had our entire organization banging away. And then we did a lot of these. You know, we did LinkedIn, you know, discussions with our leadership. We did a lot of industry. Here's what we're trying to do. Here's the mission that we're on. And we were doing it at major events and, you know, from RSA conference to, you know, all the other big ones, we would be doing things just to, we wanted people to meet the leadership. We wanted them to want to work with us and want to go on this amazing journey. And that combined with a lot of long days got us to where we needed to be, you know, and hiring those folks around the globe. And by the way, it was a global initiative. You know, we had security operations in London, in Ireland, in Singapore, and obviously all around the US and Canada. So yeah, it was busy.
Sounds like it was a wild ride. You had shared with me that you had transitioned people. So I know that the 400 global, and then were any of the employees internal transfers? Did you bring in people that were already on staff at the organization and then move them into security roles? And then there was another, I think we chatted a little bit about bringing folks that didn't have security backgrounds.
Yeah, so we definitely brought folks over in a couple different ways. First is what I would call adjacent security-like groups ended up rolling under the function of security. So that helped us. And then when we posted jobs, it internally went for the first 7 days to our own employees. And we got a bunch of people that way. Not a big number, probably less than 10% of the total number over time. Came from that, but we did get some folks, and in some of the non-critical technical roles, we did roll in people that had no security experience. We're like, okay, we need someone to help us build our portfolio manager. We need someone to help us build our communications and marketing for the security risk and privacy awareness programs. We need DevOps folks, not DevOps, but more developer type folks to come in and help us on our by design process, our security and privacy by design and SDLC capabilities. And they didn't have any native security experience. They just were people that were willing to learn, wanted to do this work, and were extremely motivated to, be part of the mission.
That's great. I always get a lot of people who reach out to me asking, especially with the transition, I'm a teacher, how would I fit in? I'm a, you know, some other type of role. How does that work? You know, how do I get into security? Or, you know, where should I start? And so hearing from you that you looked for folks that had those varying backgrounds, like we were, I was on one of these having a conversation and someone said that he needed someone for cybersecurity awareness training or something. So the teacher who had the background was a natural, you know, transition.
It's a perfect link. I'll tell you one of my favorite stories, two of my favorite stories. So the current global head of cybersecurity for TikTok, for TikTok globally, is a woman by the name of Kim Alberella. We stole her a couple jobs ago from our inside audit organization, right? Like CPA type background, like, you know,
that happens,
like that sort of thing, but like got our space, especially when she's grilling us. Like love the tenacity, love the outside thinking, and suckered her into coming into the security organization. She grew like a weed in the program and, you know, ended up becoming a manager very quickly, then a director of, you know, and she moved. She moved from our client security management office to our end user awareness client security management program to risk management. She ran risk management, you know, for the company. And then, you know, I was at TikTok and she was looking for another career. She actually called me and I said, come on over. Like, you know, out of the blue, I get this call. And that parlayed into her doing great things there and getting the global, you know, head of cyber for TikTok worldwide. And that was someone we stole. Another person.
Was she internal to TikTok? She was there. She was your internal audit.
At another company. Previous company.
That
we did the stealing and you know, a couple of years later, our roles opened up and she, you know, and she called and asked us, and I was floored and blessed that she wanted to go do it. And now she's, you know, she's the number one boss over there. So it's great to watch. And we had, again, a couple of jobs ago, but we had a IT support desk person that supported executives. Like when things broke badly for executives, this gentleman would, he was just good technically and he could deal through crisis and everything was, I'll fix it. Let's not worry about it. Like, you know, people are excited when their computer breaks and stuff, but like he solved world hunger for these people every day. And it just had such a great attitude. And he came to us one day and he said, you know, I see what you guys are doing at the Critical Incident Response Center. I think it's something I'd like to do. I'm like, all right, you know, you're going to need some skills. Here's like three or four courses you might want to get. Wouldn't you know it? Like less than a year later, he finishes all his courses. He's a young dad, you know, married. He's doing this full-time work, you know, with all these executives and then goes to school at night, comes out with, I think he got a second degree and some certificates. And next thing you know, he's running all incident coordination for all of the critical incident centers for this company across the globe in like less than a year and a half. And we took him from the help desk. And wow. His career has just grown. He's an amazing person and resource. But those are like, those are two clear examples of you don't have to be a security geek like me or former law enforcement or come from the networking security side of the house to do amazing things in this career field.
I love those stories because it gives people who are struggling or, you know, sometimes they feel like, I think someone here said he felt defeated, that they're kind of beating their head up against the wall. And it's just finding that right mentor and finding that right space, you know, where you could utilize the skills that you already have. And I tend to talk to them about not throwing the baby away with the bathwater. People get that expression. Like, you know, people think that they have to go all the way back down, you know, to start from scratch. It's like, you have all this great experience. You just have to figure out where you fit. In this.
Yeah, maybe you're good at making decisions. Maybe you're good at managing people. Maybe you're good at driving projects. Maybe you're good at financials. Maybe you're, I mean, you know, there's so many areas that every job requires analytically, you know, going through data, you know, like, you know, there are always great things in what you already do that will align to your next job. And it's probably just 20% more of things you have to learn to really understand the discipline.
Right. I have a person who is in fashion and, you know, high-end brands, and he started becoming more interested in security, and he's trying to figure out, you know, what his position should be. And I'm thinking, well, immediately, you know, you really having that that background and that skill set probably lend really well to some of the high-end, you know, retail organizations and places where,
or even better, think about it. What are the fashion notes? They know that how people steal other people's idea, and they know the fashion mm-hmm. supply chain. So why not supply chain defense? Why not intellectual property defense investigations or insider threat information? Like, there are a lot of people in that space understand how, you know, bad things happen in the fashion supply chain. You can apply that to general business principles and work on teams that are doing that within organizations. There's, you know, that's exactly where my mind went. As soon as you said fashion, I'm like, oh my God, the supply chain issue, right? That's where I'd position someone coming from that, you know, day one.
Yeah. Yeah. As someone who is still in HR and talent and focus, when I was sitting in the security world, immediately I thought insider threat. Like, it was just something that was, it was already there, because I, you know, in HR, you know where some of the bodies are buried and what's happening.
So. Wow, you'd really be good in this area. Just kidding. Now, there's, you know, a lot of HR organizations are doing some of the participating investigatory work around, you know, employee issues. And so whether it's insider threat or, you know, employee trust issues or things like that, HR have actually spun up their own capabilities to manage with those inside issues. So security organizations focus on criminal or deeper insider threat issues and partner with HR in ways. Yeah, it's amazing how organizations are getting creative in creating these capabilities.
Right, absolutely. So another comment, and we have a short amount of time. Romy says, sometimes getting into cyber can be a hit or miss. You could be encouraged to get certs, a degree, and still not have the experience and opportunity to get a job. My observations for those looking to get into programs that can place you for internships or a 6-month work experience. You may have to have certs already. It's a great start to start a project at home and learn how to build servers, cloud environments, your own firewalls. So he's giving some advice.
Great idea. And by the way, when you're doing that, go talk to, if you're in a job, go talk to the security group and your boss and say, hey, can I do a 3-month job exchange? Right? They would probably rather keep you than see you leave to go get a job because you're not being satisfied there. And if the opportunity exists, why not ask? Right? The only thing they can say is no. Right? But imagine if you're doing those things that, you know, that person mentioned, which is just great idea, then you can go get some actual experience with the security team at the organization you already work in. Slam dunk. You know the business, you may know some of the technology, and you're learning the cyber skills. What's not to like?
Right. We talk about that all the time on this show. If you're internal, that's what you do. Knock on the door, ask to volunteer, ask to be, do whatever, you know, be the champion, the cyber champion in your department or whatever the case is. So, Mike, Roland, we have about 10 minutes left. I wanted to ask about hot skills, hot jobs, kind of go into what are the skill sets that people need today to get into secure, not get into, but grow in security. Some folks are pivoting. Some people are already in their, you know, varying roles. What are some of the top hot jobs, hot skills that you're seeing right now in the market?
All right. I'll try to keep the top five because there's so many. So first, analytical. So how to take data, informational assets, and make sense out of them and make operational use out of them. And it can happen from everything from security back office and how do we think about metrics and KPIs, and KRIs, and do all that cool stuff to what am I looking at in an incident and how to make sense of it. So, you know, if you're analytical and can understand and consume data and regurgitate and ink that in English in a positive way, all security organizations need that. on the topic of data. So two parts of data. First is data defense and access assurance. This is a new capability, or not a new capability. We used to call it data security, but it's really deeper than that. It's answering the questions and you know, like, where did the data come from? What's it being used for? How is it moving around my environment? Who has access to it, right? That takes a lot of technologies, capabilities, and understanding. And every organization around the globe is going to have to do that in a very serious way in the very near future. So it's a hot skill to have, a lot of new technologies in this area. So I would obviously really consider it. The other thing with data is, how do I use data intelligence platforms to actually consolidate all of our informational assets to have better insight, better threat management, and better defense and reporting capabilities? You know, how do I use all of that to say, listen, we can do a CCA, continuous controls monitoring, continuous controls assurance by using just our data assets and not having 15 people go collect spreadsheets or GRC applications. Like, how can I use data to defend my organization, manage our compliance, and drive better decision support platforms for my CISO in the business? So those are two very different things, but data is important. And I guess we can't not leave a show without saying the two little letters AI, because AI is important. Don't get me wrong. It's huge. I sit, you know, on an advisory board for an AI security company. So it is super, super important for a couple different reasons. So let's look at the two things. First, if you think about the skill set needed to defend AI and the complexities around that, and, you know, just look at, like, we use the MITRE ATT&CK framework. Well, there's the MITRE ATLAS framework for understanding threats and defense against AI. People that understand what we can monitor against and what we can't, what tools or technologies are available or what we need, to understand those AI pipelines and the ecosystem that they operate in internally and externally, really, really important. It's nascent. I think people have the opportunity to go get trained now for a job that's coming now. You can look at different organizations out there. You know, I know Cranium AI happens to have a training program for security practitioners that you can sign up for, and they will teach you. But all these organizations are going to need red teaming. They're going to need bias defense management. Like, there's so many new job positions that have come out with this onslaught of AI. But remember, and I just saw that note from the listener that I think for Patrick, that's awesome. It's, you know, the reality is 80% of defending a technology infrastructure is really the same. You know, there's common components on defending, monitoring, responding, having all those capabilities. The 20% is applying it to the new technology that comes out. But at the same time, understanding what threat insertion, data insertion, access to, you know, bias mechanics within the, like, some of that's going to be the CDO side, some of that's going to be the CSO side. You guys have to figure out what it is in your organization and fill that area. And by the way, we're going to be using AI to defend our organizations. So that's the second job in AI, I would tell you. And so I think that's four jobs. I mean, that was five different jobs. I mean, I could go on for like 20 more minutes in this space, but listen, between data defense, knowing data, career and analytics, and AI opportunities, it's a ton of work coming our way.
That's a lot.
So prep yourself.
Oh, that's a lot to get into. And that's exciting. Very exciting about the progression of where we're going. Final question here. Hello, Roland. Some of these questions are finally starting to pop up. Would you have any intel on what security certification is of value for fashion and merchandise? Well, it's one of the questions that I asked.
That's a good question. I think intellectual property and supply chain defense is probably, you know, I know there are a couple of universities out there that are doing things in supply chain defense. There are some amazing CISOs that have focused their entire careers and have made their mark in the world in this. And it's so complex, right? Like, think about it. If you're in retail, or if you're in fashion, or if you're in textile, right? you're not making most of that stuff. You know, you might be doing the final, you know, put together of everything, but that stuff's coming from all over the world. There's so many things associated with understanding that supply chain. I think that's number one on the investigatory side, counterfeit. So certification, counterfeit investigations for business operations, I think is pretty big. It's not a cyber career, but I think it certainly is an area that you should consider. And the last one, of course, is e-com defense. So organizations that provide a certificate in the space of cyber defensive programs for e-commerce, which is money movement, web front ends, API manipulation, things of that, like that, you know, go get a certification in that space, because, you know, every retail organization that has an e-commerce front end needs that type of skill.
That's great. And I know Dusan is looking for a mentor too. He's one of the people that with the with that industry experience. So, and Patrick says AI engineer from, he was the one that said 45 minutes and not a mention of AI.
I try to wait to the very end so I don't get totally
to the bitter end. To the bitter end. Roland, it has been an absolute pleasure. I knew how much fun we were going to have on here today, and I really truly appreciate your time and expertise and all the different things that you've done in your career. And I know that this has been helpful and will be helpful to budding security professionals, current ones that are transitioning, those folks that want to become leaders, since you already created 29 of them. Wow.
I had a small part, but it's cool to watch.
Yes. So we appreciate you and we thank you for coming.
All right. Thanks, Renee.
All right, security peeps, see you next time. Bye, everybody.